Super excited today to have Gabriel Dolan, and we're going to be speaking about how to humanize communication within business, authentic leadership, and business storytelling, some of my favorite topics. How are you doing today?
I am really well today. Really excited to be here.
And you're calling in from sunny Melbourne.
Well, yeah, it's not so sunny, but it's probably the only day that hasn't been sunny in all of June, so we cannot complain.
Fantastic. And look, for those that are watching us live or on a replay right now, let's kind of do a bit of a background. Like, tell us a bit about you and what it is specifically you do and how you've kind of journeyed your way through life, including some pretty fantastic stories you're going to tell here today to be where you're at right now.
Yeah. Look, I guess, you know, I started my career in, you know, as a trainee computer operator on mainframes, which shows my age because I'm not even sure companies have mainframes anymore. At National Australia Bank. And I was there for, 17 years. And throughout the end of my career at NAB, when I was in some leadership roles, I just noticed the power of storytelling, that when you shared a story, it got your message across it better. And when you shared a personal story to communicate your message, it had real cut through. So I sort of started to notice that the really great leaders were sharing stories and the brilliant presenters were sharing stories. So about 15 years ago, I left NAB thinking I knew storytelling was a critical leadership skill.
Yeah.
And like any skills, it can be taught and everyone can get better at it. So about 15 years ago, I left the relative security of a well-paid corporate job and started teaching people storytelling. And I've been doing that ever since.
Wow, fantastic. Do you think that there's a difference? Storytelling is a fascinating thing, and you kind of got to look at, like, you know, going to the pub of a Friday night and having a few beers and having a chat and the bonds that are formed over that. Do you think there's a difference between stories that are being told that are real and authentic and stories that are made up?
Oh, absolutely. So a couple of things. I'm still in close contact with some mates that I went to school with and, you know, would be at the pub every Friday night in my 20s, and they think it's hilarious that I've actually got a job making a living out of this because I was known as a bit of a storyteller. But there is a massive difference between the stories we share in our personal life, you know, with our mates down the pub, yeah, and how we share them in business. And I mean, you know, that's one of the things I teach. There's some real considerations when you're sharing stories in business.
Yeah.
One of the things I talk about is that they always have to be true. So sometimes people can go, well, as long as they're believable and it gets your message across, no harm done. But there is massive harm done to your credibility if you are making up stories and or exaggerating them to the point that they're not real. And yes, the only reason people do that is they think that their personal stories aren't interesting enough or they're not big enough. But they actually are. Your personal sort of day-to-day normal stories are the most relatable because, you know, most of us are all pretty day-to-day and normal.
Yeah. And I think it's even more than that too. Like, I don't know about you, but I feel that human consciousness has shifted in such a way that BS meters far better now than what they ever did. Like, I think 10, 15 years ago, like I was remembering when I got back into business 18 years ago now, and I'll never forget, I went to Harvey Norman to buy some virus software for my PC. I was always having viruses and issues. So I went to get some virus software and I was talking to the guy there and I had really no idea what I was doing. I didn't know much about computers, certainly didn't know much about virus software. And I was asking which one he'd pick. And it was interesting between the two choices. It was between like Norton and Kaspersky or something. And he sold me this Norton virus software. And what got me over the line in the end was the fact that he told me that he had this for himself.
Mm.
But it didn't get me over the line on buying Norton. It got me over the line of buying the other one, because what I realized is that he's bullshitting me. Like, I could feel that he was inauthentic with what he was trying to sell me to make the sale because he just wanted to be done with me. Like, it was a $100 sale.
Yeah.
Right? But I also realized, looking back, I remember that story, and why it's been so pivotal for me is I realized I could pick that up back then, but I was probably a little bit more sensitive than most people. Empathically and intuitively. Yet I think nowadays everyone is so sensitive to when someone is telling a fib.
Yeah.
And someone's not being authentic.
Yeah. And I think, like, especially when you're sharing a story, one of the things I say is when you retell a personal story, you don't just retell it, you relive it.
Mm.
And people can sense that. Like, you know, when you can just, something's not quite right. And it's, you know, it's our bullshit detector. And I don't know whether it's got better or not. I'm not sure. I think most of the time people can sort of pick up when something's not quite right. Mm. And, you know, in the end, like, you know, we're probably used to salespeople telling us that stuff all the time. But in the end, when you're sharing, one of the reasons you're sharing stories in business is to actually connect with the other mm-hmm. person. It's yes, to get your message across better, but it's to connect. And so if that's mm-hmm. one of the purposes, it was like, why would you make something up? Because it's just not going to work. It's not going to be as effective. And if they find out later that you've made that up, they will feel manipulated. It becomes a betrayal of trust. Absolutely. And some people go, it's just a little white lie. It's more than that. It's a betrayal of trust. Mm. And so I just think, why would you do it? It's just not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. And hello and welcome to all of you joining us online across multiple platforms. Members of my team are there engaging with you guys. So if you've got any questions throughout this for myself or Gabriella, please jump in the chat, let us know. We'll be more than happy to answer them for you as well. And also let us know where you're calling in from today. Let's talk about authenticity and authenticity coupled with storytelling or mm-hmm. being able to retell or relive those stories, I think is a very powerful tool. Firstly, like, why is this important? Like, why do you think that it is important to be able to tell stories in business, and how does authenticity connect with that?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of talk about the moment about authentic leadership. Like you never heard those terms 20 years ago. I'm not sure what's driven it. I do think this new generation, when I say the new generation, I'm talking probably the last decade. It's what they're looking for. They're looking for leaders that are real. They're looking for companies that, you know, have a greater purpose than just profit. Mm. So when we talk about authentic leadership, it is about, and it's also bringing, you know, our whole selves to work and bringing our opinion. So I think authenticity is being true to who you are, not being completely different from what I'm like at home and what I'm like at work. Now, granted, we all act slightly different depending on the situation, but you don't want to be different. So there's a real push for leaders to be all more authentic. You hear the word authentic, to be more human. And what that means is moving away from the title, because I think, you know, we still, titles can bring up barriers. So, you know, if you're speaking to a CEO or a senior person, their position alone creates a barrier. So when they can share authentic stories that show vulnerability, and again, when we talk about vulnerability, they just might be talking about some of the self-doubts they've had in their early career. They might be talking about being really worried about something, and just showing that like human element that breaks down those barriers. And then people sort of go, oh wow, you're sort of like me. You have the same challenges, you have the same self-doubts, you have the same stuff going on in your personal life. And they become more human, and they're seen as more authentic. And that has all these benefits, like it builds trust. So it actually builds trust and respect. And it strengthens relationships. So, you know, again, whether you're talking to the people you lead or the customers you serve, it strengthens relationships. So that's why authenticity is important. And storytelling just becomes a way to demonstrate that authenticity.
Yeah, I love that. It's funny. I've been talking a lot around like authenticity and more so vulnerability in leadership, and noticed there's such a power in there. And I think, you know, part of it is because at our innate DNA and who we are as human beings is driven by that need to belong from the reptilian brain. And when we can share things vulnerably and when we can share things authentically, as you mentioned before, people can start to relate to them, and they can start to see their own internal challenges or frustrations or, you know, maybe weaknesses and so forth, relating to someone else who they've perceivably maybe put on a pedestal because of the title of CEO, because of the title of CEO or something like that. Coupled that with the fact that we're in this huge social media market where everyone perceivably posts what they think people want to see, which is how great their lifestyle is and how well they've got their shit together. Whereas reality is that we all have problems, we all have challenges. And I think that emotion can really connect people. How could somebody start to use this more into their business? And what do you kind of perceive as the benefits? Like you spoke about trust and so forth, but what are the tangible benefits for the entrepreneurs and business owners that are watching this today that are busy just trying to make sales and just trying to get money in the door?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm using this downtime to write my next book, and I think the title of my next book sums this up, why you would do it. And it's called Stories That Bind. All right, so we're forming this bond. How to connect customers and engage employees. And that to me is ultimately the reason why we're doing it. So you can absolutely use stories to get your message across better. So what story does, it's the way the brain works. Stories tap into emotion. And when I'm saying emotion, I'm not talking about emotional, but they tap into the emotion part of our brain. And that means people understand it better and actually remember it. So they've remembered the story and your message. But again, when you're talking about, you know, if we're sharing stories and, you know, we mentioned the word vulnerable and stuff, it doesn't all have to be about showing vulnerability, but it's a way to engage our employees. So again, we talk about employee engagement. If you had a choice between an engaged employee and a disengaged employee, you're going to take engaged all the time. So storytelling is a way to help engage your employees in you know, what you're doing, your vision, your purpose, your culture, your values, you know, the way we work around here. And again, storytelling is a way to connect with customers. So, you know, how do we tell a story that they remember? And then when they come to that purchasing decision, there's a bit of a bond with who you are. So a story can actually completely change the way you think of a brand or a product or a company. So, you know, regardless how small you are, whether you're, you know, one person band or a multinational, it's thinking about what messages do I need to communicate? What are the stories I can share? I might be biased, but clearly it's about educating the people that need to do it. Because if there's, you know, I see train wrecks when I see companies go, oh, we're going to start telling stories. And we're going to get our people to start sharing stories, and they don't give them training, and it's a disaster because it doesn't work, and it can scar people for life because it's a really negative experience. And actually knowing what a story is, the amount of have you noticed on websites the About Us page has changed to Our Story? Have you noticed that sort of trend that goes on? I can't help myself. I go in and look, and 9 times out of 10, it's not a story. So calling something a story doesn't make it a story. A timeline of your company does not make it a story. There's so many small businesses that have brilliant stories of why they founded the company that they don't share. For some reason, they don't share. Or they think they've got to be all professional, and it just ends up being paragraphs of jargon that doesn't connect or engage with anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, really great insight. And I guess, you know, you've only got to look at the box offices and the guidelines they run to create movies and so forth. There's a specific journey that they take you through emotionally to get you to engage in that movie and watch it to the end. And if we can start to encapsulate that and move that into our sales process, move that into our marketing message, move that into our team communication, as you said, you've got a much more engaged audience all round. If you guys are watching right now, love, like, any questions you've got for us, please put in. We've got a question here from Matt. He said the pandemic narrative is about sobriety and rethinking material consumption. But once all this relaxes a bit, we might be slid back. How do we get out of this dangerous cycle?
So the dangerous cycle, what do you think he's talking about, the dangerous cycle? We go back to what we used to?
Going back to consumption, going back to, you know.
It's a good point because we, I think... I don't know. I don't know the answer to. Maybe we will. My big hope is that we don't. I think a lot of people are talking about, let's not go back to the way we were, and whether it's consumption or whether it's working, you know, in the office for 12 hours, it's trying to capture the good things. I think this could be a wake-up call. I always think of, you know, our grandparents. Our grandparents were very, very frugal, right? And they were that because they lived through the Depression. So they lived through those years where they didn't have a lot. So that sort of changed the way they lived their life for the rest of their lives. Not everyone, of course. And I'm thinking that maybe, I mean, hopefully it doesn't go as long as the Great Depression, but this might be that catalyst where, you know, where we're sort of reminding ourselves of the material things aren't that important. And I think for companies too, reminding ourselves that, you know, purpose is much more important than profit and doing good. So, you know, I just hope we don't lose all the good things that have come out of this pandemic.
Yeah, not nicely put. And what I'd add, I guess my perspective, a few things, like I think that any challenge or any crisis brings with it the seed of opportunity. And I think Napoleon Hill shared a similar thing in his book, Think and Grow Rich. The difference is the person that experiences that crisis or challenge, whether they choose to see the opportunity or not.
Yeah.
And I think in this few things, first and foremost, like whilst we as a society or as individual or as a community are looking at not trying to be the past, we're still focusing on the past, right? We're still focusing on the past, and therefore we're going to continue to bring the past into the present and carry it forward to the future. So first, I think it starts with us starting to consciously create a future from now, knowing what we know, having been through what we've been through, the goods, the ups and downs, the bads, everything else like that, and to go, okay, like what would future look like if it could be the way we want it to be, and start to actually create it from a place of nothingness rather than creating it from a place of looking in the past. That's the first thing. Second thing, I think that we all have a personal responsibility within ourselves, within our family structure, within our social structures, our community, and our broader community. I think that, I don't know, like we can sit back and wait for the politicians to create change, but you know as well as I do, it's not going to happen as quickly as what we need. And it's not. I think as entrepreneurs, we have the biggest ability to shift human consciousness forwards. Like we do, and everyone's voice matters. And the question I'd first ask is like, what are you doing? Mm. Like, what are you doing? What am I doing? What are your family doing to ensure that this dangerous cycle doesn't continue? And start from that. It might seem like a very small approach, but it's also more productive than to potentially sit there and try to dictate change outside of us. I think that any great change in anything in life first starts within us. And it's through that we can then become the leader. You know, coming back to what we started talking about, like becoming a leader and allowing others to follow in our footsteps. Yeah. We can't do that from a dictatorial perspective. We must do that by first living congruent to those lifestyles and those paradigms ourselves.
Yeah. It's like the Michael Jackson song. You're going to start with the man in the mirror. It's like, so yeah, you show your own leadership and do what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And look, if you love the conversation so far, please like and share this. Tag someone else in who you think might need to tell better stories and bring more humanness into their communication. Tell us about how you've kind of used some of this methodology and some of what you've created into other businesses and into other organizations and what the results have been as well. So we can kind of start to, I guess, tangify examples of this.
Tangify, is that a word?
Or
just
I made that word up.
I love it. Yeah, just lab. Like we can make up. We're making up so many new words with coronavirus, aren't we? look. There's several ways, and again, it probably depends on the size of the organization, what you're about, what you want to do. But I would say that most organizations are delivering messages to their customers. So how can you start to use stories for that and delivery messages to their employee. So the first thing you got to be clear on is what are the messages you're trying to communicate? When I work with organizations, I teach them how to do it, but it's normally around a purpose. So, you know, is this for sales pitches or is this to communicate their values? And the first place we start with was what are the messages? And I'm amazed where some people will go, I go, what's your message? And they're still talking 10 minutes later and they can't articulate the message. Mm-hmm. Or they go, yep, I know what I want the story to do. I want them to communicate this, 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 and this. So it was like, well, that's five messages. So you need five stories. So being really clear on the message. And then it's finding the stories. Now, this is a combination of your own personal stories you can use. And when I say personal stories, it's like nothing to do with work. Finding them, but also then finding stories throughout your company, you know, perhaps of employees doing some great stuff, employees living the values or employees doing some really good community work or how you've helped customers. So I sort of think of it, if you think of it as a storytelling spreadsheet, you got all your messages and then across the line, you've got potentially all the stories you can use. So your own stories and stories of others. And so just doing that, just being aware of, well, what are the messages? But the very next question you ask yourself is, what story could I share to get that message across better?
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me of, not sure if you've ever heard of Eugene Swaps. He was one of the best marketers of all time. And he developed a thing called the five levels of awareness. And you start off with like and it's related to customers and customers' buying patterns. And you can start off with most like unaware. Then you have, so they're completely unaware of you and unaware of your product and services. Then you have problem aware. They're aware that they have a problem, but they're not aware there's any solution that exists for that problem. Solution aware, they know they have a problem and that they know there's some form of solution out there yet. Then you have product aware. They're aware of a product to fix the problem that they have. And then you have most aware. And most aware is basically someone who's jumping on Google and saying, hey, where do I find an iPhone 10, blah, blah, blah. And they know everything about the product and features. They know the cost. They're just competing on price.
Yep.
Stories have the ability to educate your market from a very early stage of inception before they even realize that they have a problem or that they have a need or a solution exists, and take them all the way through the buying cycle, which earns credibility, it earns trust, and it earns their credit cards at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Because you've chosen to educate them more than your competitors who's going out there running advertising or marketing, which is, like you said, a timeline of a business or, you know, a list of features and benefits, rather than actually taking the time to communicate in a way that, that they can receive why this product or service is important to them or why this message is important to them.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I think storytelling is one of the most respectful ways to communicate. I think, first of all, you do have to put a lot of effort into it. The reason we communicate with facts and figures and products, you know, product benefits and specifications, because it's easy. It's mm-hmm. easy, but it's not really engaging and it's not talking to their real needs. So, I mean, you know, you don't need a story for everything, but sometimes when you want to get cut through, when you want to build, like you said, really powerful way to build trust and respect and credibility, which is, you know, in the sales cycle initially, that's what's going to continue the conversation. You are not going to continue a conversation with someone who you're buying from that you don't trust. It's just going to stop straight away. It's just, it's like when you get a LinkedIn, you know, when I get a LinkedIn request and the very next thing is they're trying to sell me something, I just block them, because it was like, hang on, well, you know, do we want to go out for dinner first? It was just like going straight bang into it. And it's just, it's actually disrespectful and just not an effective way to sell.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. I finished writing my new book that releases soon, The Path to Freedom.
Yes, and well I had, done.
I had one of my team go through and read it first. And she said, Barry, it's amazing. It's fantastic. The implementation, the steps in there are phenomenal to help someone create a business that can work without them. She said, but you need to tell more stories. He's like, you know, check out some other authors that tell more stories. So we actually went back through after the book was finished end of March. We went back through, we interviewed a bunch of our clients, and we wove into each chapter our client stories based on them implementing that particular methodology, that particular thing. And the feedback second time around has been mind-blowing from people, because they can relate a lot more having heard somebody's story in relation to the thing rather than just seeing the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably have the opposite, because I love story so much. When I write my books, it's story, 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 story writing. And, you know, once you get into the flow of the story, and then sometimes like, you probably need a bit of facts to back that up. It was like, yeah.
Statistics.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Boring, boring. But, you know, it rounds it out, because again, you need both. So yeah. I talk about, it was actually Aristotle, right? So 2,500 years ago, Aristotle said, when you're trying to influence people, you need three things. You need logos, ethos, and pathos, which is logic, personal credibility, and emotional connection. And what a story can give is personal credibility and emotional connection. And they're the two most important. So you still need logic. You still need all three. But too often we lead with logic, we stay with logic, and we get really frustrated that people aren't buying off us because it makes logical sense. But all we're doing is logic. And all logic does is inform people. Yeah. It actually doesn't influence people.
Yeah. God, I love that. Outstanding. And for those that are watching, listening today, whether it be live or on the recording, where can they find you if they want to find out more around what it is you do, maybe grab a copy of your book or check out some workshops you run?
Yeah, look, the easiest place is my website, so gabrielledolan.com. If you're interested in storytelling, you know, you can sign up to a 7-day storytelling starter kit. So it's sort of, you know, subscribe and you get this. And it will just sort of get you started to think about how you could use stories, take you through a process of how to find the story. So that's probably the best way. And you know, all my books are there, and there's a whole heap of free resources and white papers. And coming up in July, I'm actually running public workshops on storytelling. So I normally only run them once a year in like Melbourne, Sydney, and Canberra. I managed to get Sydney and Canberra in before before we all shut down.
Yeah.
So it's the first time I'm running virtual training workshops, which, you know, but still really engaging and interactive and still all the same value and content. So okay. they're in July. And again, they're on the website, or, you know, follow me on LinkedIn.
Outstanding. Excellent. And yes, and we'll also, my team will pop the comments in the comments below, some links to find you as well. We've had a comment, a question here from Sid. He said, one weird result of the pandemic is people debating whether it's fine to take life more slowly at this stage, at this age of crisis, or try to hustle a bit and not waste time. What message do you think rallies more people?
Depends what you're doing. So if the question is related to sales, there was, I know very early on, this thing of don't go out and push, don't try to sell when people are in survival mode. So you're taking it easy. What was the last bit? What relates to people?
Yeah. So what message do you think rallies more people? One is that we should be taking life more slowly at this age of crisis, or two, we should try and hustle a bit and not waste time.
Well, I think it depends on the person. Like, really, I think it's a combination of both. I know, for example, you know, I was meant to be in Columbus and Chicago this week, you know, speaking. So my diary has allowed me to take things slower, but at the same time, I am not wasting this time. So yeah. I've been spending, like, you know, every morning I get up and my husband goes, "What are you doing today?" I go, "Writing." The same thing. So I've been not wasting the time, not hustling as such, because I think in the sales sense, because the reality, a lot of my clients, their training budgets have been slashed. They're just focusing on, you know, initially they were focusing people on working from home. Now they're focusing on getting people back. So it's finding your right time to hustle as a sense, but you don't want to be wasting it. And I think it's what you said before, Barry. It was like, maybe spend this time rethinking how we could do things differently, as if not just rethinking how we get back to normal, but how we recreate our own future. So I think you can do that. And, you know, and there's nothing wrong with taking it slow, because I know my best ideas come when I'm out walking the dog or going for a run. So, you know, I think do both.
Yeah. I love that. My answer is going to be a little bit controversial.
Okay.
And I'm okay with that. I think that, and it's similar to yours too, though, is that I think regardless of pandemic or not, like, life is life. And I think that there's always going to be another, like, pandemic around the corner, right? The thing that we know about life is this is not the first time that something like this has happened, and it won't be the last time something like this happens. And yet I see a lot of people that live in fear. I see a lot of people that have allowed themselves to be shut down and live in fear during this time, which has actually created more illness in them and more stress and more chaos than living life the way that they would normally. Now, what I mean by that is don't disrespect the fact there is something serious that's been going on and take precautions. But I also think, like, don't focus heavily on this being a negative thing or a bad thing and all this fear over here, and don't get too caught up in the head of the clowns, like, as you know, spiritual bypassing and being kind of like, oh, this is amazing. There's so much opportunity out there. It's like, no, like, people are fucking dying. Like, shit's happening, right? And there's opportunity. Like, they both exist, just as they both existed 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Yet a lot of this stuff wasn't shown to us in front of us on media like it has been. So from my perspective is that if you need to rest and slow down because that's what your body's calling of you, rest and slow down, right? If you feel like, hey, I need to hustle right now, I've got bills to pay, I've got food to put on the table, like, go out and do that. But don't, I guess what I'm saying is, don't allow the external environment to determine how you act internally. Allow how you feel internally to create the action that you have externally. You know, for me, over the last 6 months, I spent 2 months or so nearly in isolation. I got locked up in immigration in Indonesia, like a whole bunch of stuff happening. But I still chose to focus on my fitness. I still chose to work out, even though I couldn't go to a hotel room. Like, I still chose to build my business. But there was definitely times that I felt I needed to rest, and I rested. And I guess the biggest thing that I've learned over the last 18 years of being in business is that, like, trust your inner knowing. If you're feeling burnt out, like, rest. Don't wait until life knocks you down and you can't work anymore. And vice versa, if you've got the energy there, if you've got the inspiration there, follow that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's something that I think you and I, you're sort of, we talk about creating the future, but you're also creating the present. So you're right. When this pandemic hit, I kept saying to people, I'm secretly loving it. And then I wondered, why am I saying the word secretly? And I know I was saying the word secretly because, like you said, because people are dying and people have lost their jobs. And yes, my professional life fell off a cliff, but you know, I'm grateful that I'm in a financial position where I can, you know, it's not great, but I can ride that out. But I loved it. I was getting up, going running. It's the fittest I've been in 25 years. And but so yeah, I think the added thing is we're hearing about this every single day and night on the news channels, and it's, and that can be overwhelming. Yep. But you know, yeah, it, I think we said the same thing, yeah, sort of in different ways.
No, I agree, and I believe that we did. And it was really interesting going through the process of writing this book, is that, you know, I went through a process of like sharing how to build a business to become first and foremost financially free, and then secondly, time free.
Yeah.
And I was experiencing like a lot of freedom in my life. I was living in Bali, learning to surf, playing guitar, writing a book. Like, life was great. Pandemic hit. Came back to spend some time with my kids in Perth, couldn't get back to Bali, found a way back to Bali, got locked up in immigration for 4 nights, no food, no water. And the interesting thing was, is that during that experience, that's actually when I learned what true freedom was. Mm. Because there wasn't a part of me that was stressed or was worried. I actually came to terms with the fact that, like, what if I end up in jail for the rest of my life? Like, the situation that I speak about in the first chapter of the book, I share what happened, but I was facing potentially getting locked up, and I came to terms with that. And I found that the true freedom was my ability to manage my own emotional state, regardless of the situation. Like, we all chase money, we all chase time, and that will definitely provide you with an aspect of freedom. But I think until you start to work with the way that you show up internally for yourself, regardless of the situation, you'll always succumb to some outer power outside of you, that you'll blame the government, you'll blame the economy, you'll blame the person down the road, or that guy that slept with your wife. Like, no, like, you have the ability to choose how you show up. And I think that's true freedom. And it's not some mantra, but it's actually owning all of who you are. And it comes back to what we spoke before, like that authenticity.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting you talked about financial freedom and time freedom. I reckon most people would think you have to choose. And my experience with that is that you don't have to choose. I remember, you know, so I run my own practice, right? So I do a lot of travel. And I got to the point, not that I was burnt out. I was never burnt out. I'm always sort of controlled my time. And I got to the point probably about 6 years ago where I just drew a line in the sand and said, I'm not doing any delivery or training or travel during school holidays. Mm. So that, you know, I've got, my kids aren't young, like they, you know, they're now 19 and 16. So it's not as if they were really young, but I just decided that I was going to do that. And the amount of people that said to me, oh, so you're obviously prepared to lose work. And it was like, I don't think that's the case at all. And it actually has had the opposite effect, because when people want me to run training and I go, well, I'm not available for that. And initially I used to say, I'm not available and that's it. But I actually go, I'm not available that because it's school holidays and I don't. And they go, oh, all right. And so they change. They would, if they want me, they will change the date. You know, if there's a conference that they can't change the date, you know, I will have a conversation with the family. I'm not saying I don't ever do it. I'll have a conversation and we'll make that decision, but we'll make it as a family. And what that has meant, it's almost meant that it's put me at a higher, like, you know, scarcity, and it has not, I think it's had the opposite effect. Yeah.
You value yourself and your own boundaries and worth above, not above others, but above being dictated how you live your life. And
every time you say yes to something, you're saying no to someone else. So again, people will go, how do you have that discipline to say no to clients? And I go, because if I say yes to them, I'm saying no to my family. Yeah. And it doesn't matter how much I love a client, they're not gonna win that, you know, that.
I think too, when you say no to someone, whenever you say no to someone, you're actually always saying yes to you.
Yeah. You're saying yes to yourself first.
And we train people how to teach us. Like, I share this with my clients all the time. Like, if you pick up the phone on a Sunday to a staff member or to a client, you're training them that it's okay and you'll be available on a Sunday to pick the phone up.
Yeah.
You know, if you write back to someone's email at 6 a.m. in the morning, you're training them that it's okay to expect or to receive that. Now, if you want to deliver that level of service, fine. But if you don't, just realize that you've created an environment through your own way of being.
Yep.
We're going to end with something. We had a question here from Linda from Perth in a second. Really enjoyed the last part of this conversation, especially like around the freedom aspect, because I think this is something that, especially with what we've been through, people are craving more and more. And certainly from my experience, they're perceiving that more money or more time will give them that aspect of freedom. But I can tell you right now from my own experience and from many people I've coached that until you really find that freedom within yourself, you know, freedom to express who you are, freedom to set boundaries and say no to others, all these things we've spoken about, like no amount of money or time is ever going to truly set you free. And if you want to find out more, we'll put a link below. You can jump in for a pre-release copy. I'm pretty excited to get it out.
Believe me, I know. I'm writing my sixth book, and that when you've got it in your hands, nothing beats that excitement.
I grew up not being able to read and spell properly.
Now that we're whispering, I failed English in my final year of school and have published 5 books. So, you know, go figure.
Yeah. I just love when people tell you can't do things. So Linda from Perth asked, please tell us, what's the most powerful story you know, which is not like the cheesy faith in humanity type thing? Do you want to wrap things up with a story?
You know what? I'm going to share a story that I often share in my training workshops, because I think it demonstrates what I'm talking about with stories, that it's not, you know, it's not climbing Mount Everest, it's not saving the world, it's your practical day-to-day stories that can help get your message across. So shall we end with that?
Yeah.
So just to set it up, I was working with, I came in and ran storytelling training for a company for their risk management team. So the whole risk management team. And the head of risk, her name was Rosemary, right? And she said, the biggest issue I have is that whenever we're talking about risk, everyone looks at me and goes, you're the risk manager, that's your job. And she goes, you know, I've tried to tell them I can't manage their risk for them. All I can do is help them manage their risk. Nothing changes. Okay. So that's the setup. This is the story she started to share. She said, when I was a kid, I grew up on a farm, and growing up on a farm, there was all these dangers we needed to be aware of, but mum would teach us what to do. So we knew what to do if we came across a redback spider in the timber heap. We knew about all the potential traps in the dam after heavy rain. And we knew what to do if we ever came across a snake in summer. And I remember this stinking hot day, mum was yelling at me to get my bike from the front gate. So I ran down the path and then I just froze, because in front of my bike was this massive copperhead snake. But I remembered everything mum taught us to do. So I played statues and I slowly walked backwards until there was enough space between me and the snake, and I ran back to the house to tell mum. And I'm sharing this with you because it reminds me of the role we play in risk. All I can do is give you the skills, knowledge, and advice, so when you come across your own copperhead snake, regardless of what that looks like, you will know what to do. So, so I share that story because it's this real simple stories. It's about getting your message across. So Rosemary said, you know, every time she shared that story,
that's the best
it changed the behavior. So people would go, oh, have we identified all our copperhead snakes? So it's finding those day-to-day stories that will help get your message across. And she just said that story changed behavior. And, you know, in the end, that's what we're trying to do, isn't it? We're trying to influence people to do something different, feel something different, or think something different. And a story is going to give you traction on those three things where logic never will.
Yeah. If you love that, hit the love button on the comments. Let us know as well. That was great. And you can really understand like how a somewhat maybe boring and drab subject of risk management, like all of a sudden it's sexified.
Yeah. Is that another exactly. word?
Sexified?
Oh, you love making up words. Yeah. That's
all of a sudden sexified, but because you've added some context into it.
Yeah, yeah. And what she was doing beforehand was just providing logic. Like, and she said that she'd provide all these examples of, you know, the consequences of this company that didn't manage their own risk and the benefits of this company. But they're, you know, they're like case studies or they're logical examples, which again, logic's has a place, but it's through the story that, you know, she actually got the message across.
Love that. Love that. It's been an absolute pleasure. Enjoyed chatting with you. If you guys enjoyed this interview, please start a watch party, let others know about it. Hit a comment up, tag someone else in who you think needs to tell better stories. Maybe it's your partner. Maybe it's someone at work. Subtle little hint, nudge, nudge.
Can I tell you a secret? My husband is the worst storyteller. It's like,
what's his name? Can we tag him?
No, I don't. No, no. I share too many stories about him and my kids, but he's just, he hasn't got the succinctness down pat yet.
Yeah. Well, he's got you, so.
He's got me. I'll just tell the stories. I'll tell the stories about him.
Fantastic. So look, if you want to access any of Gabriella's resources, they go to?
GabrielleDolan.com. The website is probably the best place, and, connect on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. And if you want to get signed up for a pre-release copy and some amazing bonuses for my new book, The Path to Freedom, we haven't got a website up yet. Yeah, we do.
Just make it up. Call it pathtofreedom.com.au.
It's on there, but equally, we'll put a link in below here. You can sign up, pre-release copy, and we'll get it to your hot little hands and a bunch of bonuses as well. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Game Changers podcast. There's a couple of things I'd love you to do to help us and help yourself to spread the message further. Make sure that you like the Game Changers on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn. Please subscribe by clicking the link below to ensure that you keep up to date with the weekly episodes we share here at the Game Changers podcast with amazing entrepreneurs and business owners around the world. And of course, if you're in a position where you may be overwhelmed with business or looking for a way to grow faster and more effectively, and you realize that the key to success is being surrounded by amazing people who have been there and done that before, I'd like to invite you to apply to have a game plan session one-on-one with one of my team here at The Game Changers. There's no cost if you get through. All that we ask is that you are doing a minimum of $250,000 per year to really be able to utilize the strategies and tactics and the mindset shifts that we share with you, that you're coachable, that you're a decent person, and you're willing to take on board some advice. If not, that's totally cool. But I know for me, I wouldn't be where I am right now without the support of so many mentors and coaches and resources along the way. And I'd like to pay that forward and give back to you the opportunity to work with us one-on-one for free to put together a customized game plan. And the reason we're doing this is a couple of things. Number one is that sometimes it's just the smallest thing that can make the biggest difference. And I think that entrepreneurs and business owners have the opportunity to change the world. And if we can maybe help you to make the smallest shift to change your life and your world, you're changing ours in return. The second thing is that we are always looking for amazing clients to work with and to welcome into and invite into the Game Changers community. And so if at the end of the call, you do feel that there's a huge amount of value there, that we feel that there's a great values fit there, we can have a conversation about working together. But this game plan call, there's absolutely no obligations to work with whatsoever. Allow us to help you with the years and years and years of knowledge that we have in growing and scaling great companies. And I think that business owners are the future of the world. If there's a way that we can help you to create a better business, more profit, more fulfillment, more fun, I would love the opportunity to do that now. So click the link below, book your game plan session, make sure you follow us on social and stay up to date with the latest episodes of the Game Changers podcast. My name's Barry William Magnetti. Thank you so much for your support and look forward to seeing you next one. Bye for now.